get ready for an all-new Hardline segment. It's time to step into the Snake Pit. And now, with something completely over the top, the host and star of the Snake Pit, Snake.
Sponsors! American Leak Detection.
Oh, looky, looky.
Thank you very much. Well, a dear friend of mine sent me this saying, you know, you're in radio, right? Yeah. You like sports, right? Yeah.
Check, check.
Well, you would really like this story. And it's a story that I had no idea about. And we are coming on the coming upon the 100 year anniversary of it. Did you know that Friday?
This coming Friday?
Friday, July the 2nd. 1921 marks the 100-year anniversary of the first sports broadcast of a radio, or I guess radio broadcast of a sports event.
Dang.
Where Jack Dempsey, you probably could have guessed it was either baseball
or boxing,
yes. Where Jack Dempsey knocked out the Frenchman George Carpentier in a makeshift boxing arena in Jersey City with 90,000 people. A 90,000 person makeshift arena was built for this. This is how big boxing was back then.
Dude.
Yeah.
Say, put him up.
And, but the headline of this is not that boxing was big back then, is that they figured out a way with this new little invention called radio, how to put it on there and broadcast it to the masses. Almost, 250,000 plus people were listening to this, which was a huge, huge number back then.
How far did it reach?
Let's see. The total area, 125,000 square miles from Maine to Maryland and as far west as Ohio.
Damn.
So a huge chunk of the United States.
No doubt.
From back then.
And maybe if you were on a boat.
And you're exactly right. It was broadcast to people at sea, which imagine, you know, we're sports obsessed now. People were sports obsessed back then, just different sports. But imagine for the first time ever, you were able to listen to something. You were able to be there.
Amazing.
When for the last 50 years or however long sports have been around, you know, longer than that.
It also birthed.
It was about newspapers.
Yeah, it also birthed the play-by-play guy.
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that as well. The birth of the play-by-play guy was born 100 years ago.
And right. And
I mean, how else would you broadcast if it weren't radio? You're not going to be able to see or hear anything. I mean, they're not doing a play-by-play for the people in the audience, right?
Right.
So this is the first play-by-play guy.
And it's done with, you talk about an asterisk, this is done with a huge asterisk beside its name because the guy that was doing play-by-play wasn't even there. So it gets really, really crazy. So go back to 1920 when radio was military. So I don't know why I thought radio was a thing that even like 1905, people were sitting around their homes listening to radio. But that wasn't the case. Back in 1920, radios were being sold. What do you think a radio would cost in 1920 to a home radio? RCA decided, let's figure out a way to get these World War I things where people were using it to communicate with each other. And we can figure out a way to broadcast it, not just as a communication piece between two parties, but as a broadcast entity.
News and entertainment.
What would we charge people, though?
What do you think, Bob?
I can't even imagine what a household income would be. $50, but in 1920, does that mean I just bid $500 or $5,000?
I'm going to say $300.
$75 for a radio. Think about
that,
though.
Have you done the inflation calculator on how much that is? Because that's a lot of money, I bet.
I have not. RCA figured that if 7% of America's 15 million households bought one, that would mean $75 million for RCA. So they were just trying to make this thing just, you know, a microwave.
But you're trying to sell radios, but there's nothing on the radio.
No, there's nothing on there. So back in 1920, there was a station in Pittsburgh that was granted the country's first commercial broadcast license.
$1,000 radio, Corby.
KDKA.
$1,000?
$1,000 today.
Wow. Yes, KDKA.
You had to be incredibly wealthy to afford a radio.
This guy came up with the concept of playing music at specified times twice a week for people in Pittsburgh. So twice a week you got it, and they announced the presidential election. There wasn't a lot of programming on. So somehow you had to figure out when it came on, and then you had to be there at the right moment. And, oh, listen to that. That was a great song. Well, no, wait till next week.
Was Hannity on?
We'll hear another one. What?
Was Hannity on? That's why I'm buying
I'll tell you right now.
So then this also birthed the first program director.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, why don't we put music on every day?
Right.
What?
The same seven
What are you,
songs?
A witch?
So you got this fight set up, all right? You have two premier fighters in Jack Dempsey and the French dude. And you've got this company out there that says, we're pushing radios. We're going to sell these radios now. Now, how do we combine the two?
This sounds like the plot to Hot Rod, but go on.
It kind of does, right?
Yes.
So they got this guy named Tex Rickard, who was in New... I don't know if he was from Texas, but I asked Bob this a couple of breaks ago. He basically ran Madison Square Garden.
Yes.
And to make sure people would show up in Madison Square Garden, he put a hockey team together called the Texas Rangers. Tex apostrophe S Rangers.
One of the original six.
Which turned into the New York Rangers.
How about that?
They were called the Texas Rangers.
Did you know the New York Rangers were named after Texas Rangers?
I did not.
Well, now you do.
I didn't know either.
We've learned a lot today.
So this guy was a heavy-duty promoter. And
really have, if you think about it.
And they were trying to figure out
it
what...
It started with Van Gundy. I'm sorry.
No.
The weirdest band ever.
They had
Van Gundy!
They had to find a transmitter strong enough to pump out a signal because they wanted it to be broadcast to all these people. And so who do they reach out to? The military. This just sounds so renegade. They reach out to the Secretary of the Navy, FDR, who would be president a decade later, or less than a decade later, that they would test this transmitter that was built for the Navy. They would test it out for him. They consented, and then they had to figure out where to put this transmitter. They needed a structure high enough at the stadium to hold an antenna. So they used the train station. This is going to be, the fight was in New Jersey. They were going to use the train station in Hoboken, where a 400-foot tower had been erected a few years earlier. They were going to stick the transmitter on top of that.
Dang.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. What do they do? What do they stick the other end of the cord to? They didn't have anything to stick it to. They ran the wire to a clock tower like you saw in Back to the Future. That
sure.
is no lie. So
there's World War One Bill Geiger up there just
yes!
wiring things up.
Yes! I mean, imagine that. So they got it all, and there's no real license you need, or you just
tower.
Put it... Yeah. Potted meat.
What are you watching,
tower.
Bill? Clock tower.
Fight. So, you need permission and figure out a way to broadcast it. You didn't jump through hoops. You just had to figure out a way to do it. So, they got it all set up, and around 1:30 p.m., as the fighters entered the ring, there was a guy that... was real. I mean, and all these guys were really into radio that were like the early versions of radios. Like, they were nerds that were putting all this together. And to read this story, it's like, oh my God, there were radio nerds way back then in 1920, ham radio guys. Mm-hmm. So there was this guy, last name of White, who had practice play by play, which there wasn't a term for it, by shadow boxing in the mirror, his own mirror, and describing the action. I'm going to hit you here, and then I hit you here.
To the moon.
So he's,
an uppercut, hey?
So he's at the fight, but there's no way to... There's nothing there at the fight to broadcast. The broadcast was at the train station.
Wow.
So what happened was this play-by-play guy, or whatever he was known as back then, he relayed his descriptions over the telephone to a clerk at the train station. Who then typed up his reports and handed them to another man who was an RCA employee, radio employee, remember the sale of radio, and an amateur radio enthusiast. He read the descriptions into the transmitter at the train station.
So it was tape delayed.
No one knew.
Right.
No one knew.
It was like Norm's fantasy call of the horse race that in radio time took like 6 minutes, but in the horse race takes like 60 seconds, right?
Right. Yes, that's exactly right. So to add a little ambiance.
Wow, so he was reading a script of something that happened minutes earlier.
Yes.
Okay.
Doing his best to recreate it.
Make it sound.
It was scratchy,
legit.
As you can imagine, scratchy as hell. Now, most people that were listening didn't have their own radios, and so theaters, bars, whatever the term for, like VFW type places where all the servicemen would go, they congregated where they could, you know, one radio was there. They sat in silence with this one radio, each one of these bars or whatever, and would stick it in the middle of the room. They were all circled around it, and they just listened.
Was there any net sound, or did we just have a guy talking?
So I'm glad you mentioned that. It was scratchy enough to where you really couldn't tell, but the guy, the RCA employee, had a bell.
Of course he
and
did.
And they freaked out when they heard a bell ring.
Yeah.
Because the guy was like, Mom, we got to make this sound somewhat real.
We're really there, man.
And so
the bell was basically the first fart drop.
Yes. As we've been told forever and ever, what is radio? It is theater of the mind. Even back then, they were smart enough to realize we need something.
Yep.
Yes.
That's so cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And so to broadcast the action, they had set up a temporary long-wave radio station, given the call letters WJY. It was all set up, and away the fight went. There was a knockout in four rounds. Now, here's the rub. If it would have gone longer than four rounds, no one would have heard it. Because at the radio or at the transmitter, the guy who was calling the fight, all right?
Did the Sports Day app go down?
Pretty much. He was so close to the radio tubes. So there was so much gear. I mean, think about this.
And they didn't know what they were doing.
No. He was so close to the glowing radio tubes, he was blinded for days. Couldn't see a thing. Then in the final round, one of the overheating tubes exploded.
Oh, no.
He grabbed the base, pulled it out of its socket, searing his hands and giving him third-degree burns before inserting a new one.
Dang.
Sounds like Rhines fell off the ladder there.
I know.
Oh, good God.
So the dude had third-degree burns, and he was blind, that called the fight, and he wasn't even there.
Unreal.
Yeah. So as the fight ended, the transmitter blew and was, I mean, it was smoking. It went out. So it was over. When the fight ended, it literally ended. Wow. And 100 years ago this Friday, that all happened. Why we're on the air right now doing this was all because of that.
You hear that, Danny?
Play the recording. I'd love to hear what that sounded like.
Yeah, I don't think that they
didn't set up a phonograph.
Yeah.
To the left.
Right.
Another laugh.
I would love to hear what that play-by-play sounded like.
Dude, tonight. You talk about like the Holy Grail of radio.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, that would be it. Yep.
That's awesome.
So there you go.
Love it. All right.
That was one of my favorite snake pits
thanks a
ever.
Lot. Thanks,
I said that last week.
It's 5:30. Up next. So let's look at this list of all of our fallen basketball heroes.